Meet Reed L. Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try and fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Mr. Obama likes to pretend that he's Abraham Lincoln or living some kind of parallel existence to Abraham Lincoln. Never mind that that probably makes poor Abe roll over in his grave. I will say one thing, and that is that November of 2012 is a watershed moment for this country. What happens that election day is going to determine the fate of America and your future and the future of your children's children. That is how significant this election is. It's going to be a choice between progressive, nanny state, welfare, self-reliance out the window, depend on government for everything, continual spending, continual rises in debt, and a collapsing economy with America being subverted to a second rate, perhaps even a third rate nation. It's happened to other great nations, including Great Britain, Argentina, Rome. It's a long list over thousands of years. They all made the same mistakes, and we're making them now, except they're not mistakes, they're intentional. And we've talked about that on previous shows. This show is going to be about the Republican nominees or potential nominees for the presidential position in the United States. Make no mistake, the presidency is a very important position. However, what's also important is that conservative thinking, I don't care if they're Republicans, Martians, people from Jupiter, Democrats who are conservative, people with a conservative outlook must control the House and the Senate. That is critical. And almost as critical is a conservative in the White House. Because, you know, corporate culture comes from the top. When you have a gnarly CEO of a company, the company, and you all you folks know examples of this, both large and small, in your local region or, you know, nationally that you deal with. A company that doesn't care about customers gets that attitude from the top. A company that does care about customers gets that attitude from the top. Corporate culture, in this case, the corporate culture of the United States government, and unfortunately still many of the states, comes from the top of those political pyramids. And the culture in Washington right now is, you know, lots of gab about about caring about the little people, caring about the common man, but nobody cares about anything but ideology. This is on purpose. This is a plan to bankrupt America and build a social utopia on top of the rubble. The bottom line of this, and by the way, you can read their own words. I've given you those quotes, and I've given you those links in the past. I will do so in the future, too. But this is what these people have planned, and they are hell-bent on getting it achieved. And the only way to stop them, one of the only ways to stop them, is to make sure they are not in positions of power. A shadow government has been built. Trust me on this, folks. A shadow government has been built while we've been asleep at the switch over the last two or three decades. You need to remove the people at the top. You need to make sure you have conservative minds controlling both houses of Congress. And we need to dismantle this sinister apparatus which has been built while we've been snoozing. I'm going to start off today by giving you just a short background on what I think are the key issues to think about when you are making a decision in the primaries and later on that crucial date in November, which is coming quickly. I mean, we're 13 months away. When you pull that voting lever and when your friends pull that voting lever, because it's not just enough for you to think like this. You must get involved. You must talk to 10 other people and make sure they talk to 10 other people. That's how this battle will be won. I can't emphasize that enough. And you must make your voice heard to your representatives in Congress and to your senators. Making your voice heard to the White House doesn't matter because they don't care. First of all, I think the most important things to think about when you are selecting a candidate to run against Barack Obama is spending, government debt, and the size of government. And very closely following those three critical aspects, kind of the underpinning of everything, is tax reform. Because proper tax reform can, shall we say, boost. It will cut spending, cut the size of government, increase revenues, and empower the business sector. And the business sector is what's going to create employment, and the business sector is what's going to create wealth and opportunity for all in America. Nobody is guaranteed a handout. Everybody is guaranteed an opportunity. The next thing is unions. Now, unions only control about 14%, 12 to 14% of the total workforce. About half of that, 12 to 14%, is government employees. There's only 7%, give or take, of employees in the private sector who are unionized, but 40% of the employees in the public sector, that is states and federal government and local municipalities and counties, are unionized. There's nothing wrong with unions. Unions are a good concept. I know some of you are probably throwing something at the radio right now. However, unions are a good concept. Here's what's wrong with unions. What's wrong with unions is that it's not voluntary. Everybody should have a choice on whether or not they're in a union. Everybody should have a choice on whether or not they pay dues. And everybody should have a choice on how those dues are spent. None of those things are true right now in the current union environment. In fact, the unions have state and federal governments collect their dues for them. In other words, we're paying the administrative costs of funding unions who then use their money to buy politicians to perpetuate this insidious cycle of corruption. That has to go away. Unions are great. Collective bargaining under some conditions are great. But voluntary is absolutely mandatory. The next is immigration. Immigration is a huge anchor around the neck of America. I mean, we're like the guy in the rowboat who ties a cinder block to his neck and throws it over the side. Nobody knows how many illegal aliens are in this country right now. The estimates are anywhere from 10 to 16 million. Okay. Mr. Obama, completely contravening the Constitution and circumventing Congress, and Congress really needs to stand up on this kind of stuff. I mean, I'm very disappointed in that. He issued basically the DREAM Act, an amnesty by executive order. Absolutely unconstitutional. Stopped 300,000 deportations dead in their tracks several weeks ago. And this immigration thing is just, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. These people are feeding at our public trough. The monies that we are paying in taxes are paying for folks who are here illegally. Immigration is a great thing. My novels, my number one best-selling novels, Threads West and American Saga, is all about immigration. Immigrants built this country, but they did it right. Right now, with the failure to close the border and this DREAM Act by executive order, Mr. Obama is doing nothing but creating a magnet for more illegal immigration, which, of course, he wants. It puts additional burden on the economy, which he wants. It's potential additional voters, you know, the welfare state voters, which he wants. This is all intentional. All intentional. And it's absolutely, absolutely outrageous. There is a bill, and you folks might want to get on the horn and or send an email to your congressmen and senators, but there's a bill that's been introduced by Lamar Smith, a Republican from Texas, and Senator David Vitter, a Republican from Louisiana, called the HALT Act. It would halt the nonsense that Obama just tried to put through by, or has put through by, executive order. It would stop granting parole for illegals who commit crimes. It would stop issuing work authorizations for illegals. It would stop the extension of voluntary departures. I love the wording that these guys use. I mean, come on, how stupid are we? It would halt giving illegals TPS, temporary protection status. You know, the temporary protection status that lasts for generations. It would halt executing deferred actions. In other words, authorizing illegals to work in the U.S. One of the things which Obama has done is not only can't you deport these people, but now they're also, while they're here illegally, authorized to work in the U.S. Gee, I think that in a period of 16 to 70% real unemployment, 9.1% stated unemployment, we really don't need a couple million people vying for American jobs, do we? I mean, GE is doing a good enough job of shipping employment across the sea to China, with, I might add, hand clapping by the Obama administration. And finally, it would halt the authorization of cancellation of the removal of illegal aliens. I don't know if you know this or not, but the government's now going to perform a case-by-case review of over 300,000 illegals that are in the federal court systems. Boy, now that's efficiency, isn't it? This process could take years, and guess who's going to pay for this? You and me. We're paying for the federal bureaucracy to review 300,000 illegal alien cases. It's real easy. If you're here illegally, you're here illegally. You got to go away, or there has to be another plan. I'm not going to talk about plans today. I'm going to talk about Republican candidates. But these are things that you need to listen to relative to the positions that these candidates have on these various matters. Okay. You know, the S&P downgrade is going to seem like a slap on the wrist compared to the economic implosion that Obama's stealth amnesty is creating. This has to be reversed. You know, how about Obamacare? Another very, very important thing. You need to know where our people stand on health care. Yes, health care needs reform, but not Obamacare. I mean, let me give you an example. Okay, the former New York Lieutenant Governor, Betsy McCaughey, this is a high mucky muck. She knows her stuff. She's been involved in health care. She's from a liberal state, and basically what she says, I'm going to quote, "The early provisions of the Obama health law are bending the cost curve up, the opposite direction from what the president promised. The new rules, young adults on parents' plans, no annual caps on benefits, and no copays for preventative care are not free. They will add to the premium, and they have. There is no tooth fairy." Well said, Ms. McCaughey. Well said. That's right. The annual costs of health care have gone up 9%. Your premiums have gone up 9% since Obamacare was passed. You know, the Department of Health and Human Services, another unbelievable faux pas in the federal government. I mean, the list is a mile long. They imposed, as a kind of adjunct to Obamacare, a limitation on private insurers, increasing their cost by more than 9%, and they promised annual reviews and really, you know, really nasty stuff happening to the insurance companies if they didn't obey. Well, what are the insurance companies doing? They're raising their premiums 9% a year because they don't know what the future's going to hold, so they figure they better get their rises in right now. You know, you talk about unintended consequences, or is it unintended? You'll have to ask that. You kind of have to ask that or ask yourself that question. Obamacare has to go away. Regulations have to be reduced. The regulatory atmosphere of the United States, very important point. Very important point. The regulations are adding $1.7 trillion to the cost of doing business in the United States. You couple that with our archaic tax code, which now has the highest corporate tax rate in the world, and you have $3 trillion parked offshore by American companies, which should be repatriated here to create jobs, employment, opportunity, new plants, you name it. And we need to create an atmosphere which is conducive to foreign companies building plants here. We're doing just the opposite. Coca-Cola, the chairman of Coca-Cola, just came out and said, "Hey, we're going to invest $4 billion in China over the next year. China is way easier to do business than the United States." I mean, what kind of indictment of that? A communist country is easier to conduct business in than is supposedly the only republic on the planet and the world, the leader of the free world? I mean, something's upside down here. The OECD, okay, major international economic group, and by the way, they are left-leaning. They had a recent article in The Economist, And basically what they said is that 1% of the American population pays 45% of the taxes, and 42% of the population pays no taxes. That is the worst ratio in the world. Let me repeat that. The worst on the entire planet. The 1% paying 45% of all income taxes is the highest on the planet. That's right, the highest. But we don't pay our fair share. Those millionaires and billionaires and the corporate jet owners, nonsense. This is a left-leaning outfit chastising the United States for its tax policy and its other policies, which are disincentive to business. Okay. They, in fact, what they actually said was raising, quote, raising taxes will decrease efficiency and hurt growth, unquote. This is a left-leaning international economic group, very highly respected. Okay, Paul Krugman. He is one of the top advisors to the president. Now, you would think after 3 years of dismal performance, why don't we make it abject failure by Mr. Obama, he'd be replacing his people that advise him. Oh, no. Paul Krugman, he's still at the top of the list. Mr. Krugman, he doesn't think people are paying enough. Everybody needs to be taxed more. He even said, I think up to 100% of certain incomes should be taxed. Mr. Krugman, who writes in the New York Times, by the way, from time to time, and is left of left, and he's the advisor to the president, by the way, chosen by the president, he thinks that we should have a value-added tax of at least 5% on top of the current income tax rates. No tax reform for Mr. Krugman. No, 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 no. Yep. And he argues that the minimum wage doesn't hurt jobs. Wow, that's amazing. So I own a restaurant, and the minimum wage is $7, let's say, and my budget is $7,000 for the year. I guess I can hire one employee for 1,000 hours. Let's say the minimum wage is $10. My budget hasn't gone up because I can't raise my prices and stay competitive. So what am I going to hire? I guess I'm not going to hire anybody because I can't afford anybody. Mr. Krugman, where did you get your degree? Where did you get your degree? Oh, and the other thing he says is that, you know, the stimulus, that wonderful stimulus where we spent $1 trillion and got nothing for it, $260,000 per job, and they were all temporary. He thinks that the problem with it wasn't big enough. We need a stimulus that's at least 3 times bigger than the stimulus we did. Now, you know, one of the things we need to think about with Republican candidates, who are their advisors going to be? Okay, we certainly don't want advisors like Paul Krugman. And then the last thing that I think we really need to think about in terms of talking about the entire field of Republican candidates and how they stack up against Obama, how they stack up against one another, is the Fed. You know, monetary policy is critical to an economy. It's also critical to inflation. And it's also critical to the soundness of the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Because you don't want to be around if the dollar is no longer the reserve currency. I mean, if you want to go back in history, you look at the Weimar Republic in Germany, you look at Great Britain, you look at Argentina, when a currency of a country is no longer regarded as good tender throughout the world, and in the case of the United States, the reserve tender for the world, you have a big problem. In fact, you have economic collapse. Mr. Bernanke, who heads the Fed, has been doing all sorts of wild things, like increasing the money supply by trillions of dollars. Remember, the more dollars you have, the less each is worth. That's called inflation. And doing things called the twist, where you buy long-term and sell short-term bonds to keep interest rates down artificially. And guess who's been buying $2 trillion of United States treasuries? The Fed. Let's see. I want to get this right. So we're buying our own bonds to keep interest rates down. Okay. And where's the money coming from for us to buy our own bonds to keep interest rates down? I guess that's called kind of deficit spending. What do you think? Yeah, I think so. So the policies of the Fed are another key matter to take into account in terms of where these Republican candidates stand. All right, so as a recap, first of all, you're with Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Today we're talking about the Republican candidates. What I've done is given you a little background on what I think the key things are: spending, debt, size of government, tax reform, unions, immigration, Obamacare, and other regulations, including Dodd-Frank. And then I did leave out corruption, you know, Light Squared, where the administration is trying to tell four-star generals to endorse a company that their relatives are invested in, that Mr. Obama, in fact, was invested in himself in 2005. And then the Fast and Furious gun thing, where thousands of automatic weapons were sold and never traced to Mexican cartels. Mark my words on that one. That was done on purpose. That was done so that they could blame guns in the United States for violence in Mexico and try and get gun control laws passed. It had nothing to do with Mexican cartels. It had nothing to do with trying to track guns or track down kingpins. This was a political maneuver to try and get gun control. They got caught. And it's as corrupt as can be. How about the collapse of Solaron? $523 million of our money. $500 million of our money down the tube. And then on its heels, here's Secretary Chu rushing through in just the last week, prior to the deadline, $5 billion more in similar types of loans and guarantees. By the way, two of those newer companies receiving that yummy, yummy, yummy money of the United States government, that's our money, they're owned by George Soros, or controlled by George Soros. Yes, Mr. Soros. I think he's the puppeteer, Mr. Obama is the puppet. Remember, Mr. Obama also lent one of his oil companies in Brazil $2 billion to drill offshore, the same offshore drilling that Mr. Obama won't allow the United States to do. It kind of makes your eyes just cross, doesn't it? I mean, it's so much stuff to try and keep track of. Anyway, where do the Republican candidates stand on all these various issues? And before I get into that, I want to throw something out for you. You know, I've talked to supporters of Ron Paul or this candidate or that candidate, and they say, it's Ron Paul or nothing, or it's, Mitt Romney or nothing. Look, folks, wake up. Yes, principles are extremely important, but if you want a chance to take the principles that you hold dear and instill them back in this government, Mr. Obama, his minions, and his legions of lemming socialist progressive followers in both houses of Congress need to go away. If he wins the election, or we don't control, by we, I'm saying conservatives, not a party, if conservatives don't control both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives, you're never going to get a chance to institute your principles, maybe forever. That's how critical this election is. So while you may favor a candidate very strongly and you may piously say right now, I'm voting for Ron Paul and that's all I'm voting for and I'll write his name in, let me tell you, every vote's going to count in this election because Mr. Obama is corrupt. The people around him are corrupt. They will stop at nothing. They take the words in Saul Alinsky's playbook, Handbook for Radicals, the means justifies the ends, very literally. They will lie, they will cheat, they will steal, they will corrupt, they will tamper with your elections, they will do anything to get elected. Do you understand? Your vote really matters. And your vote really matters for this country. If you love this country, you will support the conservative who is going to be running against Mr. Obama. And I'm not here to tell you who I like today, who I think has, who I would gravitate towards giving my druthers. I'm here just to give you the facts. I've given you the foundation. These are all the really key elements that you need to know where these people stand on. You know where Obama stands on them, the other side of where we stand on them. But the Republicans, the conservatives who are going to run against Mr. Obama's progressive socialist communist regime, They have to win. That's the bottom line. They have to win. Another 4 years of Obama or a democratically controlled Senate that can block anything the House is trying to get done, from spending to military to immigration to some kind of controls over the Federal Reserve, you name it, is disastrous. I mean, I'm not sure we're going to be in a... I'm not sure the hole won't be too deep for us to dig ourselves out of. It's that critical. We're at the tipping point. We are at the paradigm shift. All right, enough lecturing. That's my opinion. On the Republican candidates, let's talk about Michelle Bachmann first. I happen to like Congresswoman Bachmann. I really think she's tough as nails. I really think she believes in what she says. I admire her conservative principles. I think that she is a little bit more fixed on social conservatism than needs to be or has to be or you want to see in this upcoming election. Because this upcoming election is about the fundamentals, right? Are we going to be a socialist slash communist state, or are we going to be a free, independent republic? Are we going to continue to be at the top of the planetary heap of countries, or are we going to sink to some lower level, which we are in the process of doing right now? If we don't solve those macro problems, guess what? You know, whether or not gays and lesbians can marry, and I express no opinion on that at all right now, whether or not, you know, take any little social issue, which I know is big social issues to some, they pale in comparison to the foundation of this country. If we don't rescue the foundation of this house we call America, you're not going to have a chance to change any of the studs, i.e. the social policies in the future. In other words, you're going to lose the opportunity for any type of win. And I think that Ms. Bachmann dwells too much on social issues to be elected. I just don't think she is electable. Even though I admire her steel spine, or titanium spine, as she likes to say, and I really admire the way she speaks up and speaks out. I think she's terrific. I think she'd do a great job. I don't think she's electable. Let's talk about Huntsman. Mr. Huntsman has had extensive international experience. He has a great track record as the governor of Utah. He and Perry spar back and forth over who did the best job at creating jobs. Forget all that. He ran a tight ship in Utah. Utah's doing better than the rest of the country. And even though he's not governor now, the foundation that he laid as governor is one of the reasons Utah is faring better than most. His international experience is probably the best of any of the conservative candidates. But, you know, there are some troubling things, and that is some praise that he threw Obama's way early on in Obama's election cycle. He has been at the helm for about a year of our interactions with China. He was the United States ambassador to China. And, you know, China, Donald Trump, it happens to be correct, China is just eating our lunch. They are kicking our butts. I happen to think it's with a big hand slap, big hand clap, big slap on the back from the current administration, who really wants to see the United States taken down a peg. You know, that's social justice for sovereign states. But nonetheless, Mr. Huntsman has been a little cozy with the Obama administration and a little bit too free with his praise for some of Obama's policies, if you will. Policies toward China, policies toward healthcare. So while he's a smart guy and he knows his international stuff, number one, I don't think he's electable just because of his personality type, the way he comes across. And number two, because I think he will turn off a lot of conservatives with basically him stating his opinion and praising some of Obama's antics. Okay, that brings us to Gary Robertson from New Mexico. You know, nice guy, has a couple funny lines. I think he has some good ideas. His concept of creating kind of a tax haven so that American companies can repatriate their dollars here and use them to spur growth and employment is terrific. However, you know, he just doesn't have the personality. He just doesn't have the force, the aura that you need to be presidential. And I don't think, well, I think he'd just get his butt kicked by Obama in an election. So that brings us to Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is arguably the smartest of the entire conservative slate. I mean, this guy knows his stuff. He knows every nuance. He knows every law. He knows every political maneuver for the last 20 years since he was Speaker of the House. He has great one-liners. He's tougher than nails. And I think he would do a terrific job as President of the United States, despite the fact he'd probably fly off the handle once in a while and make some mistakes. You know, welcome to life. However, Newt, unfortunately, is not electable. There's just too many kind of baggage connotations associated with his name. I've been divorced myself, so I make no qualms, I make no waves on a divorce, but it's baggage that he's carrying into an election. His divorce stemmed from him having an affair with his wife, or behind his wife's back while he was Speaker of the House, which forced him to resign way back when in the 90s. On the other hand, you know, he presided over a balanced budget. He was able to work with Bill Clinton, a Democratic president. We had unparalleled growth other than in the Reagan years. He is a true Reagan conservative. I mean, there's a lot of things going for him. However, I don't think that he can beat Obama, unfortunately. And that brings us to Rick Perry. Interesting guy. You know, I kind of anticipated him getting into the race, and I was kind of excited. I didn't know a lot about him, and I'm learning more and more and more. And to be honest with you, I don't like what I'm learning. I really don't. First of all, I don't like his mannerisms during the debate. I just don't like them. The body language isn't there. He fidgets. He kind of moves his shoulders left to right. He doesn't look at his opponent when he's speaking about his opponent. Many times he doesn't really look directly into the camera. These are all things, I know they're little things, but you know, they bother me. And if they bother me, they're going to bother other people. Maybe they won't enunciate them, but somewhere deep down in their gut, when they're watching him debate Barack Obama, who's going to be smooth as silk and spouting off his usual concoction of lies and nonsense and distractions, he's not going to be able to hold a candle. How many of you remember those debates between McCain and Obama? You know, McCain had all the right points, and he couldn't get them across. He looked terrible compared to Obama. There were times I wanted to reach through the damn TV, grab John McCain by the neck, and say, John, sit down. Let me take over. I, honest to God, think I could have done a better job in those debates than he did. So be thinking about that, because those debates are going to be critical. Those debates are going to be critical. And a lot of people aren't going to understand the really big picture things that we have to be alert to and hugely concerned about in this upcoming election. And they're going to vote on, you know, really, if you boil it down, on things which aren't as important. You know, what's important is a person's mental outlook, his ability to organize, his ability to do, and you're being able to rely on what he says now in terms of what he'll do later. In other words, exactly the opposite of Mr. Obama. So Rick Perry's mannerisms just don't strike me right. I don't think he'll look good next to a earnest-looking, lying-through-his-teeth Obama, and I don't think that's going to be good for the election. Additionally, I got to tell you, I have a problem with Rick Perry's immigration stance. I really do. He really kind of has a mini Dream Act going on in Texas. And listen, he may absolutely, I think he really believes it. I think he thinks he's doing the right thing. I think he thinks he's being compassionate. allowing illegal aliens to attend a college at in-state tuition rates, which of course is supported by everybody else who are legal residents. And I don't begrudge him his stand. You know, he has been elected governor of Texas 3 times. Texans are very concerned about immigration. If the rest of his stance on immigration wasn't good, he probably wouldn't be in office right now. And I'm not in Texas, so I don't profess to know every detail of his policies and what he does. He maintains very vigorously that he's the toughest guy there that ever walked down the pike in terms of trying to close the border. But he thinks we need to be compassionate to people who are there, in his words, through their own volition, through no fault of their own. And the heartless remark, you know, in other words, if you don't believe that like he does, you're heartless. Boy, that wasn't too swift. That was not, it may have been honest, and I don't begrudge honesty, but boy, that certainly turned me off, and I think it turned a lot of other people off. You know, how dare you call me heartless because I want to uphold the Constitution. I'm in favor of immigration done legally, and I'm absolutely opposed to persons here illegally getting any kind of cuts or breaks at the expense of the rest of us. You know, that just didn't hit me right. I don't think Rick Perry is electable, period. Unfortunately, I don't think he can really rally the base because of some of his stands that I just talked about. I think he's going to turn a lot of people off with his physical mannerisms and how he comports himself in a debate context, which is going to be extremely critical in this upcoming election. And I think that there's enough rumor and innuendo swirling around his tenure as Texas governor and his taking of stimulus money from the Obama administration, which they say, of course, is what created all the jobs in Texas, that it's not a good mix. Rick Perry and Obama, I think Obama might win, as incredible as that would be. Now we come to Mitt Romney. You know, I've been watching Mitt Romney over the last 4 or 5 years. Number one, I think he's very patrician. You know, in other words, he has kind of that regal air that may turn off, you know, some folks who think he kind of looks like, you know, the wealthy businessman type. He is the wealthy businessman type. He has an absolutely incredible record of organization. This guy knows how to organize things. He knows how to say, this is my goal, this is what I need to do to implement it, and then get it done. Not only was he very successful with a number of companies, although some of them, you know, slashed jobs and shipped jobs overseas, his position was to make a profit. But he was also just incredibly talented in turning around the Salt Lake Olympics several years ago. That was a wreck. They were billions over budget, months and months and months behind schedule. They weren't absolutely sure they were going to be able to have the Olympics there. I mean, the International Olympic Committee was actually looking for an alternate site. In stepped Mitt Romney, fired a bunch of people, hired a bunch of people, put together a plan, made it work, and it was hugely successful. In other words, he took really a sunk ship, raised it out of the depths, put flying flags on it, made it look pretty, and it sailed perfectly through a stormy sea. That's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. It's way more than Barack Obama has ever done in his life. That's for sure. So Mitt Romney, who right now is leading Obama in a one-to-one matchup, I think is electable. Now, there's some things about Romney that bother me. Number one, his Obamacare, to coin our former Minnesota governor's coinage, if you will, of what Romney put in place in Massachusetts, which, by the way, had a mandate. You know, Romney has gotten better at explaining that. I mean, I'm still not comfortable with it. He swears up and down that he will basically abolish Obamacare by executive order the first day he's in office by granting waivers to all the states. But, you know, in the end, Obamacare has to be repealed because the next president after, let's say, Romney, the next president can just reinstate it by executive order. That's a whole different subject. Romney's Romney Care in Massachusetts leaves me cold. I don't like the mandate. I don't like the state support of health care. It hasn't done much to limit costs. In fact, costs have gone up in Massachusetts. Romney explains that away by saying, you know, listen, there's some things that he likes and some things that he doesn't and some things that don't work that he would change, but that it was a state's rights issue, that each state should be able to decide its own course. That's what Massachusetts chose by a vast majority of its voters, which is true, and that works for Massachusetts. But the federal government does not have the right to impose it on the rest of the states, and that is also true. So that's his explanation, I think, of the biggest herring around his neck. Additionally, you know, Romney has in the past exported jobs from his company, from his companies overseas. I mean, listen, as a CEO, you're charged with making, with maximizing profit for your shareholders. And the policies of the United States promote shipping jobs overseas, which is why it's been occurring. They promote deindustrialization, which is why we've been headed in that direction. All that has to change. That is the foundational stuff I was talking about at the beginning of the show. The bottom line is, I think Romney has the skills. Romney certainly has now, after 5 years, the experience. And I think Romney is a good enough speaker and knows his points well enough that he can more than hold his own against Barack Obama on a one-to-one televised debate. I also think that Romney, the very things which I and others don't like about Romney, and that is some of his kind of not-so-far-right leanings on this, that, and the other, Obamacare, for instance, that's actually going to make him appeal to a wider swath of voters. You know, right now, independents have fallen out of bed for Obama, okay? 44% of independents dislike him versus 24% who like him. That's like a complete reversal of what put him over the top in the 2008 election cycle. Independents tend not to be quite so far to the right as many hard conservatives. They are certainly nowhere near as far left as Obama and the rest of his communist cronies. I think Romney would appeal to that middle-of-the-road voter who's absolutely critical. In fact, they will control the election of 2012. So I think Romney is the most electable, even though I do have a problem with some of his policies in the past and some of his statements. We must discuss two other candidates before we get to Herman Cain and the top tier in the Republican slash conservative field. First, let's talk about Rick Santorum. He's a former senator. He's a passionate guy. He speaks well. You know, there's something about his attitude which is kind of plaintive. It's a little whiny. I'm sure you've seen him on the debates where he goes, call on me, you're not giving me a chance to speak. Somehow that just turns me off, and I think it turns off others. I think he has a fairly good command of domestic policy, a reasonable command of international policy. But once again, kind of like Michelle Bachmann, he dwells a lot on social issues. And the social issues right now, not diminishing their importance, but there are issues which precede them. You will never get to the social issues. You will never solve the social issues unless you solve the fundamental malady that's gripping the United States right now under the hands of a socialist regime. So Rick Santorum, as well-spoken as he is, despite his fairly good government background, and despite his reasonable, at the very least, and in some cases quite good, command of domestic and international affairs, Rick Santorum cannot be elected. I mean, he simply could not hold a candle to Barack Obama, and he would get lost in the maze of social issues, and people would vote for Obama and against Santorum for all the wrong reasons. So that leads us with Ron Paul before we get to the top tier. He recently sunk in the polls. He was up around 12%. He's now at about 6%. puts him in the bottom tier of candidates. I believe Bachman's about 3 right now. Santori is like 4 or 5. Gingrich, by the way, is 11. And Kane is 17, Perry 21, Romney 23. But, you know, Ron Paul has some great ideas. I mean, his ringing the alarm bell like Paul Revere rather than Ron Paul on the Fed is terrific. The Fed is out of control. Jefferson said a central bank could be our worst enemy and do more damage than any army of a foreign nation. Jefferson might have been right. Ron Paul's been carrying that torch for a long time. But I think that Ron Paul's international stance is dangerous. I mean, it would be a great world if we could just retire to our own borders, be protected by the oceans, leave everybody else alone, and everybody else would leave us alone. But you know what? We're hundreds of years past that. In this day of the computer, intercontinental ballistic missiles that can travel 5,000 miles in a matter of minutes, enemies across the globe, and people who are motivated by ideology. In other words, it doesn't matter if you leave them alone. They're going to hate you anyway. They're going to want to destroy you anyway. I think that Ron Paul's isolationist view is extremely dangerous to the United States. And I must say, I really don't like his views on Israel too, which is Israel can stand on its own 2 feet and doesn't need America as an ally. The fall of Israel would be a disaster for the United States, a disaster for the West, and an absolute crushing blow to democracy on the planet. So for those reasons, I personally don't like Ron Paul. Not on a personal level, obviously. I think he's a nice guy. I like some of his domestic and fiscal policies, but I think his international policies actually sink the ship. I think this odd notion that he has that we're responsible for 9/11 is, you know, distasteful, and he simply can't be elected. And I say that with all due respect to all those avid Ron Paul voters out there who won't vote for anybody else but Ron Paul. Well, you know what? You need to rethink that, because here's what's worse than not having Ron Paul as president. It's having Barack Obama as president. And if you want to get to the issues that Ron Paul espouses that you believe in, the first thing you have to do is get rid of the socialists who are running this country and put in conservatives. And then eventually you can get to those issues which are below the core issues of the Constitution, the economy, and those things which are the foundation, you know, the foundation that needs to be restored of the other issues that you're focused on. And that brings us to Herman Cain. You know, I liked Herman Cain the day he announced. The very day he announced, I went, I really like this guy. And every time I have seen him debate, and every time I have heard him speak, even though I cringe a little bit because he's not as articulate maybe as the rest of the candidates, you know, he doesn't speak in flowing terms like Newt Gingrich, or in snapshot bullets, you know, punctuated with hard hand gestures like Romney. But I'll tell you what, the guy looks you in the eye. He looks his opponents in the eye. He says what he thinks. And I really think he can appeal to the common guy. I think he would be a huge hit with independents. I think that he would absolutely undercut Obama's death grip on the minorities. And I like his ideas. This guy is about small government. He has a business background like Romney. He's been very successful. He understands how to prioritize, gather the information, implement a plan, and achieve his goals. That's very, very important. You know, probably the best description I've heard of him is, on one hand, you have Obama, okay? This is a guy that's all about socialism, communism, class warfare to bring about his ideological ends, an apologetic stance toward America, a lack of understanding. No, that's too kind. A hatred of American exceptionalism. And he is all about government doing everything for everybody. On the other hand, you have Herman Cain, and his life story is exactly the opposite of Obama's. Okay? Obama's route to the top was affirmative action, community organizing, climbing up the political ladder, legal and political shenanigans. But you know, Herman Cain's was hard work in the private sector, entrepreneurial initiative, and managerial skill. He kind of embraces the successful as role models, not as objects of envy, as Obama does. Herman Cain doesn't hate quote-unquote rich people, and I don't know who of you are making $200,000 a year who thinks you're rich, but you know, you are an enemy of the state. You're one of those millionaires and billionaires. Okay? Herman Cain wants everybody to become rich. I like that. I really like that. The bottom line of Herman Cain is he has enjoyed a rather meteoric rise in the last few weeks since he won the Florida straw poll. Now look, let's not get all too excited about the Florida straw poll, because what the press doesn't tell you, there's only like 2,500 people voting in it, okay? This is not some huge election around the, or a straw poll that encompasses the entire state of Florida and hundreds of thousands of Republicans. There's only 2,500 votes. Nonetheless, it was an impressive showing. It is an important straw poll, if nothing else, just in name only. And it showed that this guy is real. Right now, Romney has about 23%, give or take, of the Republican vote. Perry has about 21% and slipping. And Herman Cain has 17%, third position and rising. So I'm going to end this show with my thoughts on the best ticket that could absolutely beat Barack Obama and carry on its coattails enough conservative senators to carry the Senate, and on its coattails enough conservative congressional candidates to maintain and perhaps increase control of the House of Representatives, which we absolutely, folks, if this country is going to survive in the way we want to see it survive, if it's going to go back to its principles, if it's going to reach back to the touchstone of its history and heritage, which made us great, and reinvoke, you know, those mighty truths, we have to win. My pick is Romney, president; Herman Cain, vice president. I'd love to know your thoughts on it. Next week, on the right side, we're going to be interviewing Veronica Anderson. She's a doctor, an MD, a celebrity, and a radio personality. Millions of people listen to her radio shows, Wellness for the Real World. She's terrific. I've been on her show several times. She's been on mine. But she is a very accomplished, very astute black woman. And, you know, she is liberal-leaning. She lives in Philadelphia. And I want to get kind of an opposing viewpoint on this show for you to listen to. And I can't think of anybody better than somebody who's a woman, who's black, who's smart, who understands the principles, and who leans left, whereas obviously I lean right. So next week will be a terrific discussion and interview of Veronica and what she thinks about the black vote, the minority vote, the women vote in the upcoming election. And she's going to tell you what she thinks is good about Mr. Obama. And I'm going to reiterate the points I've made in previous shows about what I think is bad, and probably some new ones. Anyway, it should be very lively and I think insightful, because it always helps to see what the other guys are thinking. So I'll see you next week. And in the meantime, be safe, have fun, make money. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the webtalkradio.net page. You can also click on his book, Land for Love and Money, and his new best-selling historical western series, Threads West, an American Saga. Watch for the second volume of the saga, Maps of Fate, coming soon. And, of course, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archives to catch up. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed L. Rosenthal on the Right Side.